Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's Friday, December 9th, and you're tuned into the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, the winter meetings have wrapped up. The free agent frenzy on spending is still ongoing. The big news late this week that the San Diego Padres, after missing out on Aaron Judge, coming in with a late offer there, they quickly turned around and offered an 11-year contract to Xander Bogaerts. You know, I thought the Padres had a pretty good shortstop in his own right in Fernando Tatis, but now they've got Xander Bogaerts in the fold for 11 years and more than $300 million.
Yeah, another crazy contract, Joe. 11 years. You know, I guess that Tatis is going to play the outfield, it would seem. And they I can't remember the kid that replaced Tatis at shortstop, but he was a pretty good shortstop defensively as well. So, you know, they've got him.
Ha-Seong Kim, is that?
Right. Yeah, I really liked the way he played, especially defensively. And so, you know, they've got three guys that are making close to $300 million, have signed $300 million contracts.
They've got close to $1 billion on their payroll over the next 10 years. So we just like three guys. So yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah. And, you know, you just wonder, you know, Bogaerts is 30 years old. You know, he's going to be, at the end of this contract, he's going to be 41. Is he still going to be playing shortstop for you? Or, you know, it's just, you know, I think you're setting yourself up for disaster. You know, most of these clubs that sign these long-term contracts, Joe, it's just the last three or four years of these deals, you know, do not work out well for the ball club. And, you know, they have to know that going in, I would imagine, or they wouldn't sign these guys.
Yeah, there's got to be some sort of formula there that AJ Preller is using, the general manager for the Padres, because they just got out from under a long contract like that with Eric Hosmer. Didn't they just traded him away to Boston, and that was one of the, you know, he was on the back end of a long contract like that, and there's got to be some sort of give and take that the front office uses that tells them, yeah, we can offer them more years like this and sort of bite the bullet when they become unproductive at the end of a contract like that.
Yeah, you know, it's either that or you're stuck. You know, you're stuck like what Cleveland was, you know, in a smaller scale with a guy like, you know, Travis Hafner, you know, who signed, you know, what at that time was what the biggest contract in team history. And, you know, he had four great years and then gets hurt and, you know, struggles for the last, you know, three or four years of the deal. And it's kind of a millstone around, you know, teams, mid and small market clubs. But, you know, the bigger market clubs, I guess, can withstand it.
Yeah. And then it's almost like teams don't learn their lesson. They turn around or the trends are just such that, you know, a guy like a Brandon Nimmo can come out and get an even more ridiculous contract after not playing a season this past year.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that blows me away that, you know, he returned to the Mets, an 8-year deal with the Mets. And, you know, it's you know, what the new owner, Stephen Cohen, has money to burn, and he's burning it, man.
Yeah, they created a whole tier of the competitive balance luxury tax for Stephen Cohen, or Steve Cohen, just his own sort of tier of that tax threshold, and he's bound and determined to reach it. 8 years, $162 million for Nimmo, a guy who didn't play last season because of injury, and now he's coming back, and he's going to be he's not going anywhere. He's going to stay with the Mets.
Just a huge, huge gamble. I mean, and you know, when you have an owner that's willing to spend like that, I guess you ride it out, and you know, the baseball people have to be happy, but even the people running the Mets have to know that, you know, somebody is going to pay the piper at the end of this thing, at the end of those contracts. And, you know, hopefully, you know, they're not still in the positions of power. Maybe they'll have moved on to another team or something, but somebody's going to get stuck, you know, holding the bag there.
How do all of these contracts that have been handed out so far, you know, if you look at it through the lens of what the Guardians did with Josh Bell, and like we had talked on Wednesday's podcast about, you know, it's a 2-year deal, but it's really a 1-year deal with options, and you know, it's favorable to both the club and to Bell, depending on how he performs, with you know, it being a $33 million contract, but really you're really on the hook for just that $33 million if he doesn't give you what you're looking for, and if he does give you what you're looking for, you're able to compensate yourself with draft picks if he decides to walk away.
Yeah, I think that was part of the you know, the deal. You know, that made the deal. You know, in the past, Cleveland, you know, I can't remember them including an opt out in a free agent contract. But, you know, this, like you said, Joe, it's a win-win situation for the player and the team. You know, the team doesn't get stuck, you know, with a, you know, a 4-5-6 year deal, get all guaranteed. And they, you know, kind of minimize their risk. And the player can, if Josh Bell has a great year in 2023, he can, you know, opt out and, you know, reset his value on the free agent market and get a bigger contract. So, you know, from that point of view, it makes sense.
Yeah. Nothing motivates a player like the opportunity or the ability to, you know, increase his value on the market like that. And I think Josh Bell is, if he wasn't already motivated to come in here and perform, you know, at his best, he's certainly going to try and do that now that the contract is laid out the way it is. So yeah, it's, you almost don't have to motivate a player there, a guy like a Josh Bell, to come in and work hard, because, you know, it benefits him to do so, and he knows it.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of the, you know, the carrot and the stick kind of theory. You know, you've got, you know, if you're you know, I don't know, you know, if you're in the, you know, the one year mode, and, you know, lots of players, we've seen it in the past, when they hit that free agent year, suddenly, you know, they're playing 150 games a year, you know, no more aches and pains. They're putting up, you know, big, you know, walk year numbers, and, perhaps, you know, this is the kind of thing that will motivate Josh Bell.
Speaking of dangling a carrot on a stick, the Cardinals went out there and they attracted their replacement for Yadier Molina. They didn't have to go far. They went in division and pried Wilson Contreras away from the Cubs, division rival, a guy they're very familiar with. He agrees to a 5-year, $185 million contract. And that was supposed to set things in motion in the catcher's market. It was supposed to give, you know, sort of a barometer on where the asking price for Sean Murphy was, and, you know, where the Guardians kind of stood in terms of that negotiation, and sort of to get the avalanche of signings going in that direction. Contreras to St. Louis, 5 years, 185, and yet no other movement in terms of catchers since then.
You know, I think if you look at the catching situation right now, the free agent market, you know, probably Christian Vasquez is the next guy on the list. And you know, the people that are looking for catchers now, you know, with you know, Cleveland being one of them, you know, do they prefer a trade? You know, I think you know, I think you know, Cleveland is in has spent their free agent money. You know, I think they with Bell, I think they I don't think they want to you know, give Vasquez a 3-year deal for like $33 million, which is, you know, what he's projected to be looking for. You know, I think they'd rather make a trade. So, you know, you've got, you know, so perhaps they go after, you know, they continue to pursue Murphy, or, you know, maybe they turn to Toronto, which has, you know, some depth at catcher. You know, we've seen, you know, from the one of the reasons St. Louis backed out on the Murphy trade discussions, and you know, eventually signed Contreras, was you know, the asking price that Oakland, you know, has put on Murphy's head. Basically, you know, they want you know, they want major league ready players, and they kind of went after the you know, the pick of the litter from the Cardinals system.
Reportedly, Oakland's asking price for in a trade from St. Louis, out of St. Louis's you know, organization, would have been the likes of Nolan Gorman, Lars Nootbaar, Brendan Donovan, Alec Burleson, and Dylan Carlson. Those were at the top of the wish list there, and that's different than, you know, sort of trying to pillage the upper levels of St. Louis's farm system. Those are all guys who have, or you know, are expected to have major league impact in the coming season, as opposed to guys who are a year or two away.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, you know, you've got to, you know, okay, now transfer that thought to, you know, I would imagine Oakland is asking Cleveland for the same kind of deal, and you know, I think Cleveland would entertain those thoughts. They definitely like Murphy. They've been after this guy since the middle of last season, so they certainly know what the A's are asking for. But you have to wonder, okay, you look at the your major league club, your major league roster, where do you have the depth, Joe? Where do you have the depth where you could give up a major league ready player, or a guy that has already, you know, made his big league debut, and you know, not hurt yourself and get Murphy back? And you know, to me, I think it has to be in the middle infield, and it has to be, you know, a starting pitcher or some, you know, along those lines. At least, you know, when you look, you try to align where Cleveland's strengths are.
Yeah, with this new information, you know, I would recalculate and recalibrate. I'd move off of somebody like a Gavin Williams or a Logan Allen, or guys at the who are just scratching the surface at the top of the farm system there. And I would say it's got to be, you know, maybe even a guy like a Zach Plesac, or you know, a starter who they like. I'm sure they could ask for Tristan McKenzie, and the Guardians would laugh. But you're talking about guys who have already made their pitching debut. Maybe they're talking like Xavion Curry plus, you know, Curry plus Hunter Gaddis, or you know, I would imagine Cleveland would be willing to part with those arms. But if you're talking position players, I'm thinking Gabriel Arias and Tyler Freeman, you know, things like that that would sort of you know, guys who are expected to be on the roster this year, the active roster this year, you know, coming up. I'm going to guess that Cleveland was at least offering Owen Miller in a trade in some way to try and move him out, because he's a sort of like a guy without a home right now on the infield. But yeah, given the new information about what St. Louis asked, or what Oakland asked for out of St. Louis, you know, maybe the conversation is slowed down because they want a replacement at catcher, and they're looking at Bo Naylor as a guy who's close to being ready, and thinking that the Guardians should give up a Bo Naylor.
Yeah. You know, it's really kind of it's going to be interesting to see how it unfolds. You know, I was thinking, you know, if you're Oakland, you know, and you're looking at Cleveland's roster, you're looking at the depth they have in the middle infield. I mean, you're going to start off, you know, aiming high. What if they asked for Andrés Giménez? What would your answer be if you were Chris Antonetti?
I mean, the negotiations would be short. That's the guys that in terms of now, this is I don't know that Chris Antonetti operates that way, but guys would be off the table would be Stephen Kwan, Oscar Gonzalez, and Andrés Giménez right off the bat. That would be those would be non-starters in terms of the conversation there. I would be open to maybe a John Kenzie Noel or a George Valera or a Jose Tania, or a Brian Rocchio, but only like one of those guys in combination with one of the major league ready guys, because those guys are at AAA or close to it, and you know, and ready to make an impact within the next year or two. But that's not apparently what Oakland's looking for.
What about a Will Brennan?
If that was an ask, I would say for sure that's something like it looked like they asked for the Cardinals. They wanted Lars Nootbaar, and that's a guy who, you know, he's the guy who made Harrison Bader expendable for St. Louis. So you got to think in those terms. You know, maybe they're not doing a good enough job of convincing them Will Benson is a guy who could make an impact for Oakland. But, you know, Benson or Brennan, I think either or both of those guys I would be more than happy to get rid of either one of them.
Yeah. So it's interesting. And then, okay, let's say, all right, they can't make a deal with Oakland. You know, they get shut out going to Toronto. They don't want to spend any more money on free agents or, you know, on high profile free agent catcher. What happens with Austin Hedges? He is still out there.
Yeah. I think if at the end of the day, Austin Hedges is still out there and you missed out on Sean Murphy and you didn't like what the Blue Jays were asking for, like a Danny Jansen or anybody like that. And maybe Vasquez is out of your price range because he's asking for too much as well. I think you pivot and you go back to Austin Hedges and you try to reunite with him and because he wants to be here. You know that what you're getting with him in terms of the character and the clubhouse and the defense, and you're just not getting anything at the plate. And it was an area where you really just wanted to improve your offense. You're going to have to try and make up for it in other areas.
Yeah, and you've added Bell, you know, hopefully if he passes his physical and everything, and you've added Bell, that's going to help the offense. You know, in a perfect world, you would have liked to added an offensive-minded catcher, but if you can't, maybe, you know, this is the fallback situation, and either would you have a Bo Naylor back up Hedges, or would you have Bo Naylor playing every day at AAA?
No, I start the season. I've maintained this since the end of the regular season. I've said Bo Naylor will not make the opening day roster unless there's some sort of catastrophe or urgent need for it, or he, you know, really blows them away in spring training. But I think he opens the season in AAA. He plays every day. He gets hot and he comes up, you know, in May unless Sean Murphy is your guy and you know he's got the position to himself. So. I haven't moved off of that, and they haven't given any indication that I should move off of that.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, just from listening to them at the winter meetings, I think that's the course they're going to take regardless of, you know, what happens at the catcher situation. I mean, Terry Francona said, but, you know, we need patience. He asked the fans to be patient that, you know, Chris Antonetti and Mike Chernoff have, you know, earned his trust in the way they put this club together, and he believes they'll have a catcher by opening day, and let's hope they do, Joe.
Well, their pitching staff, their rotation, and their bullpen, that's like driving a Cadillac. So you need somebody back there with the keys to the Cadillac and, you know, and working things. And I'm sure that they will have somebody back there wearing the gear one way or another. We talked about, you know, if this is any indication, if you want to read tea leaves or anything like that, the Guardians came out with a list of players confirmed to be appearing at Guardians Fest in January. Among those confirmed to be there, Josh Naylor, Bo Naylor, Gabriel Arias, Will Benson, Oscar Gonzalez, Stephen Kwan, Ahmed Rosario, Brian Rocchio. That's just the first sort of wave of confirmed players. I'm sure there are more that will be there, but that list is any indication. Those are guys who might not be traded before then. You know, maybe a few of them will be traded before then, but Bo Naylor, you know, on the list, Gabriel Arias on the list, Will Benson on the list, you know, it's surely subject to change, but those are the guys who will be at the convention center to sign autographs in late January.
I like that, Joe. I like that you're looking ahead, man, and you're playing that you're everybody's playing checkers and you're playing chess. So I like to see that.
Yeah, that's my reputation, is that I try to figure things out like that. You know, it's worked out so far. So we've got the asking price for Sean Murphy. We've got sort of a ballpark of that. What's going on in Boston, where they just, you know, they just lost their longtime shortstop, and you know they're coming off of a period where the ownership is being criticized for not spending money in one of the bigger markets and one of the historically, you know, more, you know, spending minded markets in baseball. They come out and they lose Bogarts, but they're offering this crazy contract to a Japanese outfielder. Yoshida is gonna sign there, and he was just posted the other day.
Yeah, Masataka Yoshida. Just Boston has come to an agreement with his Japanese club. 5 years. Well, they've signed him for a five years, $90 million, and that doesn't include the posting cost, which you know. Puts the price
like
above 100.
Something like that.
Yeah, puts the price above $100 million, and that, and you know they just signed Kenley Jansen, but they let Xander Bogaerts, a 10-year homegrown player, you know, walk away to you know, end up with San Diego. So there's there's blood in the water in Boston. So the Red Sox fans are not happy. And that is such a crazy club, Joe. I mean, they are like, you know, either they win the World Series or they finish last in the AL East. There's no in between with this team. And, you know, it's got to be driving the Red Sox fans, you know, insane.
Well, the division they play in is ultra competitive, and you know, Yoshida will help them. It looks like he hit .336 with a 10.07 OPS and 21 home runs in the Japanese league last year. But the question is, will his power translate? He's only 5'8", 176 pounds. You know, so he's a little guy, but you know he's a right-handed bat. He's going to have the monster out there in left field.
Yeah, and you know, I've read some stories where you know, other executives said the Red Sox really overpaid for this guy. They didn't, you know, that other teams didn't have him rated that high. So we'll see. You know, we've seen a lot of Japanese pitchers come over to the big leagues and have great success. Hitting wise, not so much. You know, outside of the Ichiro.
Yeah, I take that back. He's a left-handed bat, so he won't be challenging the Green Monster. It's he'll be trying to wrap it around the pesky pole. We'll see if he's able to do that. But you know, he led his Oryx team to a win in Game 7 of the Japanese World Series. So You know, that's it's a guy who knows how to win, and he's coming into an environment where he's going to have to. You know, maybe we'll see a bit of him in the World Baseball Classic, depending if he's able to play over there. So should be interesting with all the free agent signings going on, and we're sort of in this holding pattern now, waiting for the Guardians to make their next big move. I think they've got at least one big move left in them, Hoynesy, before they start the flurry of you know, little moves like a bunch of non-roster invitees that they'll be, you know, handing out and posting all those little sort of smaller moves after they square the catching question away. We're anticipating and waiting for that to happen this week.
Yeah, that's a good point, Joe. And you know, they've got time now. You know, you're out of the winter meetings. You know, now, you know, all the work you've done since, you know, the middle of last season at the trade deadline, at the GM meetings, all the work you put in at the winter meetings, now, you know, kind of, you know, it'll filter out and we'll see where it ends up. But, you know, they need a catcher, and I think they'll add one way or the other. And, you know, the one thing I'm going to be interested in, Joe, is where the payroll ends up. You know, Josh Bell, you know, boosts this thing to what? They were at $68 million at the start of last season. They go up to what, $84 million with, you know, with Bell's contract at least. And you've got the seven guys eligible for arbitration. So, you know, we could be looking at a payroll of maybe around $90 million. Who knows?
Yeah, I was thinking, I was just putting, like, doing rough math in my head. Somewhere in the 90 you know, just short of $100 million range, which, you know, would be a significant increase over the last couple of seasons. So, you know, fun to watch that and see how it translates on the field for this Guardians ball club. All right, Hoynesy, that's going to wrap up this week. We had a lot of news, a lot of action this week for the Guardians, and in baseball. We'll look forward to how things shake out over the weekend. Maybe we'll be talking about a new catcher on Monday and see what the possibilities are there. We'll catch you again on the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast.
All right, Joe.